Welcome to the MMA Podcast 208. It is August 3rd. We are back from our little summer break. Your boy was on the road the last month, seeing the country, seeing the sights. But we are back in Florida. Don't have the full studio set back up yet. As you probably noticed, there's no intro music this week. We'll probably be back to it. Honestly, going to be making some changes in the upcoming few weeks. But before we get to that, of course, we got to get to the co-host with the most. It's P Money. What's going on, dog?
Oh, Big Jake, you know, I wish we had the full studio set up just so we could have the White Snake queued up. Here I go again, or here we go again. Anyways, I'm just amped up, trying to throw in that 80s White Snake reference anywhere I can. Very, very pleased. You know, last time we were on the air breaking it down, that was for the Tough 25. Live in Vegas was a post Tough 25 finale and pre UFC 213. So there's been tons of great fights since then. I think we're just going to touch on 214, maybe preview this coming week's fights, but it's been lots of action. Very excited to be back in the saddle, which is
ton of action. And yeah, I was getting to some changes coming up. You know, we are going to be breaking down UFC 214 tonight. It's a Thursday. It's still timely. It was, you know, 4 or 5 days ago. But honestly, like, I mean, not to knock our own show, but if we're being realistic, everyone and their mother has already broken down UFC 214. And chances are you've already heard someone else break down UFC 214. And you know what? The takes will always be served up piping hot. But, you know, maybe it would be better if we could get a recap in a little more timely. So I was thinking about it. I was thinking, you know, we are going to keep doing a podcast every Wednesday or Thursday. Me and Pat every week, even though, you know, we were gone the last few weeks, this next month. You know, I really do, you know, I am back in Florida finally on a steady schedule after what was a crazy summer for a lot of reasons. Not going to get into them all, but it was a wild summer, and it was very difficult to keep up with the podcast as, frankly, I was out of town way more often than I was in town. I mean, I was just out of the state for part of June, the entire month of July, and then the first couple days of August. But things have settled down. I will be able to put a little more time and energy into the podcast, and what I hope that means is maybe doing some more interviews, getting back, you know, maybe having on guys like Ben Askren, Kelvin Gastelum, other people, obviously getting back to a more regular weekly routine. Yeah, overall, just kind of upping the quality a little bit, along with, like I said, you know, I want to, not all the time, but every 3 or 4 weeks, whenever there's a big show, whether it's a numbered UFC pay-per-view card or a huge Bellator card or, you know, a big UFC on Fox card. If it's a big, notable card, then either the night of or probably more likely the day after, look for an MMA podcast. And maybe not even with me and P-Money, although Pat is certainly welcome, you know. Pat has done almost every week the last couple weeks, or years, and it's meant, you know, certain people like Ross and Yao and Allen and Davey Boy and Ramses, you know, haven't been on this show as much, so I want to look forward to maybe having some familiar voices on the fight recap show. Hiro Hanna, I don't know if I mentioned Davey Boy, your boy Jay Jeans, and I get so many tweets asking when Ramses is going to come back. So I'm sure he will make a couple guest appearances there. But yeah, look for that. Look for some interviews down the road, maybe. And that's it as far as kind of a State of the Union 2017. You know, I don't really ever get too in-depth on what I have planned for the podcast, because it kind of feels somewhat narcissistic and egotistical. But, yeah, I am really excited. You know, it's... I mean, the fact that I was able to stumble on the MMApodcast.com and find a group of friends who, you know, like to talk MMA, and I have the ability. I want to take advantage of that. So let's take advantage of that. Let's get into this Saturday card. I know I just kind of shit on my own show saying that everyone else has broken it down, but, you know, we always got to bring the piping hot takes, and that really is still kind of what the MMA world is talking about. Just the fallout from, obviously, the main event, a stunning knockout, Jon Jones over Daniel Cormier, kind of the fallout post-fight. You had Cormier there crying. Rogan prefacing his interview with, "I don't like to interview people who just got knocked out, but I'm about to interview you," even though you just got knocked out. Joe did apologize for it afterwards, seemed really apologetic, said he was just kind of shocked in the moment. Cormier, it was terrible. He was crying. Jones calling out Brock Lesnar after the fight. A lot of craziness from that, along with two other title fights. So, yeah, before we break it down fight by fight, what did you think of the card as a whole? It was for me, pretty entertaining. You know, I feel like the last week or two we've had some kind of bum cards. And it was this really should have been the International Fight Week card. And I'm sure if the UFC could, they would have put this as the UFC 213 show. Which, I mean, this was 10 times better than with all the fights that were canceled. Some fights actually even moved to UFC 214, like Cerrone Lawler. What did you think of the card as a whole?
Well, I'm with you, Jake. Certainly, 214 was a very entertaining from start to finish. And there was only one little blemish there, I would say, one snoozer of a fight. I think we can all guess which one that is just by my allusion to it. But for the most part, even from the fight pass portion, Drew Dober knocking out Josh Berkman in the first round to open up the card, started off on a very good note. The FXX prelims, first time ever that the prelims were on the FXX network, and there were a few decisions on that one, but man, there were some bangers. My goodness. Feely versus Katara, great fight. Brian T-City Ortega taking on Renato Moicano. That was a fantastic fight. My goodness. Anyways, it was very nice, top to bottom. I definitely thought it was a pretty action-packed card. And you're right. If this were on Fight Week, I think Fight Week might have been capped off a little nicer. But like you said, I mean, heck, this is basically the card that they tried to make for Fight Week with Robbie Lawler on there and then the two title fights. So they did their best, but damn it, that injury bug just hit very hard. But they rebounded rather nicely with 214.
And yeah, let's do like we usually do, start from the bottom and work our way through. The Fight Pass prelims, pretty entertaining. Drew Dober, probably the highlight of the Fight Pass prelims, getting a first round knockout. Jared Brooks getting a split decision. Alexander Albu out muscling Kaelin Curran, winning that fight 29-28 unanimously across the board. I know we spoke earlier, and you really didn't have much comment on those. So, pardon me. So let's move to not the Fox Sports 1 prelims, the FXX prelims, which messed a lot of people, including myself, up. You know, to be honest, I was actually still on my road trip on the final leg of the trip, which was up in the New York area, visiting Ross and, yeah, both homies I met through this very podcast, which is kind of surreal. Didn't watch the fights with Yao. He actually was out of town that night, but I was able to see your boy Ross Finkelstein, the Jew, And we caught up with Yao before I left town on Monday. We all got a bite to eat. Wild how all that has worked out all through this very podcast. Feeling pretty nostalgic here. We spent the first 5 or 10 minutes wondering why Fox Sports wasn't airing the prelims till we realized it was the FXX. So if you run into that problem, keep it in mind. They're starting to put, I think this is the first time they've put a prelim card on FXX. And actually, it was a stacked prelims. You had, starting off with actually a guy I heard about through Mike Hammersmith up in New Hampshire. I don't know if he knows him or if he's just from that area or what, but he told me that his boy Calvin Kattar, I forget how it's pronounced, went up against Andre Feely on short notice as a pretty big underdog and wins a one-sided 30-27 unanimous decision. So good luck for him at featherweight. Brian T. City Ortega looking amazing, getting the third round guillotine choke against Renato Moicano. Your boy Aljamain Sterling at a catchweight of 140 against Henan Barao, getting a unanimous decision. Looked really good, did what he needed to do, brought it to the mat, wins a strange score. It was a unanimous decision, but he wins it 29-28, 29-27, 30-26. I thought the correct score was 29-27. Aljo winning two of those rounds. One of those, I believe, if memory serves correctly, the first round, I think, was a 10-8 for Sterling. And then the top fight on the prelim card on FXX, Ricardo Lamas and Jason Knight. Jason Knight, the young guy, had a lot of hype behind him. Getting TKO'd in the first round by the vet, by the bully, Ricardo Lamas. Lamas has dropped a few fights once he gets up toward the top of 145, losing to Aldo, obviously at 169, his one title shot, and then since then losing to Chad Mendez and Max Holloway, but he really seems to belong toward the top of that 145-pound division, especially now with this quick knockout of Jason Knight, who, like I mentioned, was on a roll there. So your winners, Kattar, Ortega, Aljo, and the Bully. What did you make of the prelims?
Yeah, it was a great showing for the initial line of preliminary cards on FXX. I mean, Kattar over Feely, yeah, great pressure. Really put it on the Team Alpha Male prospect. I want to say Feely's with Team Alpha Male. But, yeah, Kattar really did a good number on him. Solid unanimous decision. Ortega versus Moicano, like I said before, now that was a fun fight. If you're a fan of watching two people punch each other in the face repeatedly and often, man, this fight had it all day. It looked like Moicano was really getting the best of that, at least to me. Man, I mean, this was just a spectacular fight. These guys were really beating the piss out of each other. Could not have been more entertained. I felt like Moicano was getting the best of the hands, but man, T-City, he was dishing them out as well. Ultimately, came down to that third round guillotine choke that Ortega got Moicano in, and he did not relent, forced the tap. The judges, the previous rounds, all irrelevant with that tap. Solid scrap all the way around, and deserving fight of the night winner for that bout. And Aljamain Sterling versus Henan Barao. I enjoyed that fight. Certainly a good showing for Aljamain against the former 135-pound champ and a fighter once known as one of the most dominant forces in mixed martial arts. Great victory at a catchweight for Aljamain there. Definitely got it done in all facets of the game, both standing and on the ground. It was a good back-and-forth affair, I thought, but certainly the right person won that one. And Ricardo Lamas versus Jason Knight, my goodness. The crafty veteran Ricardo Lamas taking down the surging young buck Jason Knight. And it was a great fight. Certainly both these guys, high intensity, a lot of pressure. And it was had a really great sequence rolling on the ground there. Jason was showing some crafty groundwork against Lamas, who himself is known as a very tough ground specialist. Great wrestling that Lamas possesses. And Jason was Mr. Knight. They were rolling. They were going toe-to-toe, so to speak, if you will. Lots of leg locks being exchanged there. Then in the scramble, Jason Knight goes to stand up, and he himself had said that if I would have defended myself at this point, things might have ended up a little differently. But Jason Knight, at the end of the scramble, he goes to stand up, and definitely, if you go back and watch that fight, he was going to stand up and basically just had his arms at his side. And Lama says, oh, nah, can't take a second off in this fight. Runs up, starts swinging them things at him. A couple solid ones connect, and it was just... He had Jason Knight hurt from that point.
Clanging kept and banging.
Just clanging, banging, swinging. And Jason Knight had his head left ringing. It was... oh, man. Terrible. I'm sorry. I promise not to freestyle anymore on the show. Actually, that's a lie. I can't make that promise.
That wasn't bad.
I know. You know, and that's why I say I'm not gonna keep that promise. I may do it every now and then. But I'm sorry. Now I'm just rambling. But no, Lamas, fantastic. Jason Knight, you know, he's a super tough kid, and he certainly should be back for more. But man, Ricardo Lamas, this was his night. He showed why he is the bully and perennially one of the top ranked 145ers. Certainly, I mean, those of us who've been following for a while, we remember him from the WEC days, hanging tough. He's still in there busting people up. And I mean, 35 years old, you know, in the featherweight division, still making big things happen. It was fantastic for the FXX portion of the card.
Yeah, I was very impressed with all of the winners. You know, this was a stacked prelims. All eight guys were very talented, and all four winners won in pretty convincing fashions. Aljo and Calvin winning one-sided decisions, and obviously T-City and Lamas getting finishes. And the finishes continued over into the main card, your leadoff fight, Volkan Ozdemir versus Jimmy Manoa. And what a lot of people were saying, you know, the winner of this is up there top three, top five. You know, 205 isn't really the deepest division right now. You have Volkan coming off a couple wins as the underdog. He beat OSP via split decision and was a dog against Misha Sirkunov, who he finished in 28 seconds. Jimmy Manoa, obviously, coming off losses to Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson, knocking out OSP, knocking out Corey Anderson. Both of them came with a lot of violence, but it was Volkan who just, I mean, and, you know, I think his last fight was 28 seconds. This one was 42. He had his back against the cage, and Jimmy just not defending punches in the clinch. Volkan landing uppercut, 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 uppercut. He went from his back being against the cage to finishing the fight on the other side of the octagon in a matter of 6 or 7 seconds. I mean, just landing probably three uppercuts that, for the most part, put Jimmy out. And then as Jimmy's backing up, he's on roller skates, isn't defending anything. Volkan with very good. I mean, you know, you see a lot of guys charge and just throw these blind punches. Volkan charged and threw, I think, two or three very accurate hooks that put Jimmy out. The ref stopped it at a good time. And, yeah, Volkan with yet another sub-1-minute knockout against a respectable 205er. Pulling up the UFC rankings, let's see. I think they probably got them updated to after the fights. Let's see where Volkan sits at 205. Volkan now,
I think he's at number three in the light heavyweight.
Yeah. And you have DC at one, Gus at two, and Volkan at three. I mean, I don't know if you make Cormier Volkan, because there's no rush at all to make a trilogy fight between Cormier and Jones. Cormier gets that Joseph Benavidez treatment, where, or that Chad Mendez treatment, or that Misha Tate treatment, where you've now lost twice to the champ. So instead of getting thrown back in there, you're going to need to start at the bottom rung and ring up another 5 or 6 wins before you start thinking about a title. And yeah, it's a weird spot. It, you know, unless Jones leaves the division or Cormier leaves the division, it's difficult to see Cormier being the UFC champ again. Just not just in the convincing way that Jones beat him, but the fact that, you know, the UFC is very kind of hesitant to make trilogies where the first two fights went for one dude. But getting back to Jimmy versus Volkan, yeah, this puts Volkan up there toward the top of 205. What did you think of his win this past Saturday at the Honda Center in Anaheim, in beautiful Anaheim, California?
Oh, yes, lovely, lovely. It's, well, the fights were a lot more lovely than the weather was this weekend. I can assure everybody that. However, for Ozdemir versus Manoa, I thought Manoa was going to be the one. I thought, you know, Volkan, he's certainly, with his victories over OSP, which I want to say was a short notice debut as well, at least a relatively short notice. I don't know if that was like a full schedule bout. And then his fight against Misha Cirkunov, taking out a couple very highly ranked 205ers. Again, like you mentioned, Jake, not the most stacked division that the UFC possesses. The roster really isn't too deep at 205, and really that's evidenced by Ozdemir's climb in the rankings. He entered into the UFC just February with only one loss on his record. I want to say he was coming in at like 12-1 into the UFC and unranked, obviously, takes out top 10 OSP, comes in a couple months later, takes out one of the brightest undefeated prospects that the UFC has in Cirkunov, comes out a couple months later, takes out Jimmy Manoa. He's been in the UFC literally, I want to say, a day less than 6 months. And he is now the number 3 ranked UFC light heavyweight. You know, I thought Manoa would be the one. I've always been a big fan of his kickboxing style. But really, Volkan, with the pressure that he possesses and everything like that, I should have seen this writing on the wall, Jake. I should have seen Ozdemir coming in, getting the big upset, and taking Manoa down like this. Because, man, it really played out almost the exact same as the Cirkunov fight. Just took a little bit longer for things to come into fruition, but yeah, as soon as they clinched up, Ozdemir started throwing those left hooks. I want to say, and then he caught him with an uppercut, maybe a glancing one while they were still clinched up, hit him with the uppercut. Then as they were falling away, Manoa was kind of roller skating and then just kind of clipped him on one. And then it looked like, now he pushed him down to the ground. It looked like he clipped him on one, just caught him on the end of the chin, and then kind of like, as they were going to fall to the mat, it looked like he just shoved him to the ground. You could see Manoa's head bounce off the back of the canvas at that point anyways. And then Ozdemir comes in, I want to say it was with a nice right, and that just put it out. Felt just a little better for Manoa when he was grappling Jason Herzog. But man, Jason Herzog had some nice scrambles. I swear to you, if you go back and look at the replays, he scrambled out with Manoa, almost caught Manoa in a front choke just to let him know, hey, this, I'm the ref. It's all good, man. But man, that was just a brutal knockout by Ozdemir, playing zero games in the 205-pound division. Fantastic showing. I mean, I think you're right. He it's either DC. I mean, well, really, it's either DC or Gustafson. Those are the only two guys in front of him. And I want to say he called out Gustafson, said, let's do the battle, you know, for the King of Europe type of thing. And, heck, I see no reason why not to make that fight except for, I mean, well, no, actually, yeah, there's no reason to make that fight unless you just want to immediately put him in there against John Jones. But, hey, some people say, and yet making your case even better, Jake, if you put Gustafson against Jones, everybody's been wanting that rematch, or at least a lot of people have for some time. If you do that rematch, then hey, Ozdemir versus DC, that's another higher-ranked opponent for Ozdemir. Certainly don't want to take any steps backwards, so that might not be a bad way to make things happen at 205.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be kind of a domino effect from the top down. We will get into it in a little more depth once we break down the main event. But Jones, it seems like, will either fight Brock Lesnar or Alexander Gustafsson next. If it's Brock Lesnar, then maybe we see Gus and Ozdemir fight for a guaranteed shot at the belt. This will be a true number one contenders fight, and Jones can, you know, go and fight Brock or do whatever, and then come back and fight the winner of Gus versus Vulcan. If Jones fights Gus, that makes things a little bit more complicated for Ozdemir. I don't think they would make the Cormier fight. Like I said, you know, they're going to give Cormier a can next because they're not going to give him a short route to the belt, his route to his next title shot, if he decides to stay at 205, will be long and arduous. And God help him if he goes up to heavyweight and gets the belt back, and then Jones bumps up to 265 and takes his belt. That would be just tragic. But, I see Cormier, if he stays at 205, which I think is likely, I think he probably fights, you know, a top 10 guy, but toward the bottom of the top 10. So, Ozdemir, I think, you know, he's obviously fought Manoa at 5. I don't think we've seen Ozdemir versus Glover yet. I don't know if Glover currently has a fight scheduled. I'm pulling up his page right now. Glover currently number 4. Just lost to Gustafsson a few months ago. Yeah, give him Glover if not Gus. And as far as Manoa, you know, this bumps him obviously back down the rankings, but he is a talented 205er. You know, it's not the deepest division in the UFC, and especially when you have a perennial champion like John Jones. It seems like as long as Jones stays at 205, if you haven't fought Jones yet, that really adds to your case because he's cleaning out the division Demetrius Johnson style, or probably will be soon. Moving up the card, Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone. Fun fight. They clashed just as soon as the fight started. You had blood. It went the full 15 minutes, but it was a fun fight to watch. I was rooting for Cerrone. I thought it was a very close fight, but I think the right guy won. I also gave it 2-1, 29-28 to Robbie Lawler, who got the unanimous decision. And I guess the question now is, you know, with welterweight kind of cleaned out, you know, currently at welterweight, you have Woodley as the champion. You have Wonderboy first, who Woodley just fought twice. Then you have Lawler. Then you have Maya, who Woodley just beat. And then the three guys below Maya. Maya beat all in this win streak in Masvidal, Connett, and Magny. Then you have Cerrone, who just lost to Lawler. So Lawler seems like the obvious choice now with his win over Donald Cerrone as next in line for welterweight champ. It bumps Cerrone, like I said, down to 7th. Maybe let Cerrone kick Colby Covington's ass next. He was chirping Woodley after some drama with Dana. We'll get into a little later. But yeah, I think this puts Lawler in the spot to take on Tyron Woodley for the title. What do you think about a potential fight? And what did you think, obviously, of Cerrone-Lawler with the full distance? I think Lawler got busted up but ended up winning the fight.
Yeah, well, I want to say Lawler has been known to get busted. Well, heck, Lawler and Cerrone, they've both been known to take their licks in the process of a fight. Win or lose, they seem to come out a little busted up. But it was a fantastic fight, and I think after watching this, I think we were both like, damn it, I wish this was on 213, because that really was everything I think all the fight fans had wanted it to be. I felt like Robbie Lawler, he must have been watching the Volkan Ozdemir fight, because he just said, man, I'm going to come out and just grab someone behind the neck and uppercut him in the face repeatedly until they go unconscious. And that is almost how it happened. I mean, it was like the first 2 seconds they walk out, touch gloves, and immediately Robbie Lawler just goes in, ties up the neck, and starts hammering away at Donald Cerrone. Cerrone able to stay in, able to absorb the strikes, and it was just a friggin' crazy battle the entire way. There's flying knees, head kicks, clinching, distance strikes. It was just a friggin' war the whole way around. There was some ground action going on. Good action all the way around. I really... myself, this was one of those fights where I was, you know, just bummed that someone had to lose, but I was hoping it was a draw for a second there. I was like, man, this fight's so crazy. You know, maybe a draw could be justified, but ultimately I'm with you, Jake. I think that, Robbie did enough to win that one. He was just pressuring like a madman from the open bell. And, you know, both those guys really left it out there, to be so cliche. Really, this was a fight where there were no losers. I mean, except for Donald Cerrone. He lost this fight. But it was a very good fight from both guys. Really, no one's, you know, it could only help Robbie Lawler's stock. And certainly Donald Cerrone. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know if there is something that could drop Donald Cerrone's stock at this point. I mean, just what his entire UFC tenure has been about. You can never fault the guy or say anything less about him. But just being an absolute beast. Fantastic fight, 15 minutes of exactly what everyone hoped for.
And, speaking of absolute beast, and you know, people say a lot of mean things about Cyborg, and I by no means mean that as a slight. You know, I've seen a lot of terrible jokes about Cyborg and, you know, her sexuality and being a man and all that, and I've gone on my diatribes about it, that above all else, be a gentleman. Don't call a chick a dude. That's like such a shitty insult to throw at someone. Even if, yes, she did test positive, yes, she has voluntarily chosen to have somewhat of a manly physique, it's a super bad insult when you call a chick a dude. Like, it's pretty classless. So, not, you know, I know most of our listeners are diamond listeners. We have some of the most classy, well-read, well-spoken listeners, and I don't think our listeners would do shit like that. But, you know, you go on some message boards, and it's disgusting. You see some of the stuff written about Cyborg, which honestly is kind of a reason why I've started to root for her. You know, she tested hot for steroids. That's obviously a bad thing. I don't think that necessarily makes that a person a terrible person. And, you know, Cyborg seems to, you know, with the exception of maybe the whole thing with Rousey, kind of stay above it, kind of stay positive, keep her eyes on the prize and all that. And she's become somewhat of a heel, has incredible talent. I mean, just look at her fucking record. Lots and lots and lots of wins. In fact, the only loss in her MMA career was her first ever fight. So maybe Aaron Pico could take a lesson out of that. Started 0-1, now is 18-1. Obviously won no contest back in 2011 when she tested positive for Stanzolol. I don't know how exactly to pronounce that. But for all intents and purposes, she won that fight via, obviously, TKO. So she's basically on, you could call it a 19 or 20 fight win streak. And I want to say, yeah, literally, except for one fight earlier in her career, every single fight ends with a TKO, going back like a dozen fights. She is a female version of a prime Wanderlei Silva, and just, you know, her savageness and accuracy, and just the fact that she is ferocious, finishing everyone pretty much knew going into the fight that Tonya Evinger didn't have a chance. And, I mean, you know, people talked about it with Ronda Rousey briefly, but, you know, she kind of has a Tyson-like aura where, you know, when she's going in to fight another chick, it's not about who's going to win. It's about how fast Cyborg is going to score the knockout. This past Saturday, Evinger took Cyborg out of the second round into the third round for the first time in six fights. She had four first-round finishes and one second-round finish. Evinger took her into the third round, but it was a minute 56 into the third round where Tonya, who had taken a lot of damage in the first two rounds, finally succumbed to Cyborg Justino, who now is a UFC champ. You know, you had all that stuff with Jermaine de Randamie that we talked about on previous episodes, so I won't beat a dead horse with her getting stripped and everything like she should have been. But Chris is now the champion. It looks like they're trying to set up a fight with her and Holly Holm. That will be interesting. I think Holm has much better chance than Evinger, but you know, she might be the one to beat Cyborg, but if I was a female fighter, I would not want to take on Justina right now because she is scary at 145 and is now the UFC, I guess, the UFC's third female champion. We have three female weight classes now with Joanna and Amanda Nunes being your other two champs. What did you make of that that title fight?
Well, I'm with you, Jake. This was kind of another one of those where pretty much exactly what everybody expected, except for, well, first of all, I must qualify that with saying Tonya Evinger. I love Tonya Evinger. She is such a fantastic women's mixed martial artist.
She's a fucking badass.
She is a badass. Gator don't play no shit. Love Tonya Evinger. I was really rooting for her in this one. You know, Cyborg, as you mentioned, she only has that one loss. That was the very first fight of her career. And that was the one fight, that first loss, where she said, I'm juicing from now on. And she never looked back, won all the fights, knocking all these broads out, except for when she's getting caught hot with the piss in her system. I'm almost with Jermaine de Randamie on this one. It's just kind of, well, it's interesting, especially with her second failure, or, you know, her getting popped out of competition, but then, or I don't, was that after competition? And then they said, well, we'll give you that retroactive.
All I know is it got turned back over, and she wasn't, I guess it was a false positive or something. I don't know exactly what it was, but I mean, the punishment for testing hot, they are strict now. And I mean, just like if you serve your jail sentence, you should be able to matriculate back into society. Once you get off a suspension, you should be able to get back and fight whoever. And just like in the ring, if you refuse to fight someone, it's cowardice, and you lose by forfeit. Outside of the ring, if you refuse to fight the number one contender, now I'm not saying you know people haven't been ducking and dodging. You sure as shit, Michael Bisping wants to fight GSP because he knows that Robert Whittaker would beat the piss out of him. And he is in it, and he is, I think, trying to get around fights. You've seen, you know, the UFC and Conor kind of protect Conor from wrestlers like Frankie Edgar. You know, you've seen it happen kind of trickily or tricky, like, I don't know if that's a word, and behind the scenes, but you never have had a fighter like Jermaine de Randamie just outright say, I am not fighting the number one contender. And if that ever if any champion ever just refuses to fight a eligible number one contender, you got to get stripped. There's nothing else to say other than just like in the ring. If you refuse to fight, it's cowardice. Like, and you, I mean, obviously she doesn't want to fight Cyborg because she knows the likely result. And I would have loved to see the Iron Lady against Chris because.
You know, man.
I mean, she's got hella skills. I think she's underrating her own skills, and I don't know if she's doing this herself or her manager is telling her to do it, but that's probably the stupidest move I've seen any fighter ever make. And to say they're making a moral stand, like, what stand are you making? That once you test hot for steroids, you shouldn't ever be allowed to come back and fight ever? Like, yes. Cyborg pissed hot and in the past did steroids, but she served her punishment. She did hurt her time, and you know, as much as people want to attribute Cyborg's winning streak to, you know, her crazy physique and strength, dude, she's a black belt jiu-jitsu artist, and she is a deadly accurate and deadly technical striker. So I think people underrate her skills. I mean she was throwing expertly from different angles, you know, against Tanya. She's not just a Leonard Garcia who goes and puts her head down and leads with just a flurry of hooks. She's a tech, you know, she's no Stephen Thompson, but she is a technical boxer.
Well, some would say that. Some would say that. And you know what, Jake?
She's obviously more powerful, too. I mean, she's known for her power, but... And there are...
She's known for her power,
and there are
Jake.
Strikers...
More so than her technicality. More so than her technicality.
Definitely.
She's known for the
and
power.
And she's
but,
not
I mean,
the
really.
Most technical, but I mean, you got to have a little bit of technique to win that many fights at the elite level she has.
No, this is true. This is true. And you know, but really, you mentioned it. You do your crime, you serve your punishment for sure. And I'm with you. And I don't like to judge people, Jake. I'm not that kind of person. Would I ever say that someone is a bad person? No. But you know what? I might say they're doing bad things, but I'm not going to say you're a bad person because you can change. You may be doing bad right now.
Well, I'm not.
It doesn't
saying you.
Know,
you
oh, no, no, no,
specifically
no,
were saying. Okay,
no,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. We're universal. Yeah. But yeah. Be that as it may, you know, Cyborg. Sure, she popped hot. She did her time. Should that wash away her entire career before and everything after? Not necessarily. Now then, she pops hot again. And is given a retroactive therapeutic use exemption or something along those lines. It is pretty clear that something was in her system and it was just swept under the rug. And that was all that was all that it was.
USADA doesn't seem to be that like they're pretty strict. I haven't seen them give out therapeutic use exemptions like candy. I mean, if they did give her one. I mean, I'm sure it was for a good reason. I know her doctor said it was some stuff she needed for some female reason that I'm not going to go into, obviously. But
right.
I mean, well, you know, that's one of those tricky things. You know, I'm not. You know, I wasn't on the board and I didn't see all of the info. And even if you presented me with all the info, I'm not medically competent enough to make a decision whether that's a good enough reason to grant you a retroactive therapeutic use exemption. But I do think that USADA seems to err usually on the side of being more strict, and I don't think Cyborg necessarily has any pull. I don't think there's any favoritism being given towards Cyborg. So I think if she got a TUE, you know, I've grown to get a little suspicious of certain groups like the NCAA and NFL when they give out suspensions. But USADA seems to be kind of above deck as far as, you know, the suspensions for testing hot are pretty serious. And, I don't know, some people have gotten off, like Yoel, like Cyborg, but I think there are cases where an appeal and a exemption given is the right thing. I think it's complete bullshit. Chad Mendez is currently suspended. He takes this skin cream for eczema, and if you Google deep enough, you can find pictures. He does actually suffer from pretty severe looking eczema, which is a skin like condition or something, and he used this cream to treat his skin. And I actually was talking to Larry Pepe about it, because he said as far as he knew, that drug had little to no benefit if taken exogenously. So he is like, yeah, it's, you know, it's, I was looking for him to kind of bury Chad, but once I asked him about the Chad thing, it was very interesting. Larry, one of the best interviews we've ever done. Go and check out that interview if you haven't heard it yet. But, yeah, Larry, kind of an expert in the field, pointed out that the fact that Chad Mendez is currently suspended is kind of BS. USADA, like I said, we're going off on tangents. I think, I don't know enough about Chris Cyborg's situation, but I'm willing to give credence to USADA that if they grant her a therapeutic use exemption, that it's justified.
For sure, and that's fair. That is fair. You know, again, as you mentioned, I myself, I'm not medically qualified to make those kinds of decisions either. What I will say, though, is, you know who is really quick, some of the first ones to be, you know, when you're watching a fight, be it, let's say it's a Amanda Nunes versus Ronda Rousey, or any fight that Cyborg's in, and you know who the first person is to say, are those dudes fighting? Is other chicks.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the absolute first, ladies, y'all are vicious, love destroying each other.
Chicks hate each other, dude.
Oh, very much so. It seems that way. Anyways, anytime I'm watching the fights and any female is like, oh, are those the male fighters? I'm like, come on, you're just being a bitch. Like,
claws,
that's
coming out.
That claws, mad claws. Yeah, that's. But they're the first ones to do it. They're the first ones to do it. I don't know. I think we're not the ones trolling it up over here, Josh. You ladies, man, these ladies need to be more sensitive, bro. What the fuck?
Chicks, can't live with them, can't live without them. And did you just call me Josh?
Did I just call you Josh? No.
I think you just called me Josh. You son of a bitch.
Did I say gosh?
We're at 48:08. I'll roll back the tape and listen to it. I don't know.
I apologize if I stroked out there. Everyone knows you're Jake.
Gonna cut my head off with a hatchet when I'm reviewing this episode in post. Not that there's anything wrong with our old buddy Josh. Shout out MMA at work. Shout out sports at work. I think that site's long dead. Blue skies burn. UFC 214 co-main event. Tyron Woodley versus Damian Maia. This fight had a lot of people booing. A lot of people were comparing this fight to another Damian Maia title fight, one where he fought Anderson Silva in Abu Dhabi. I thought the two were much different. I thought, look, was it boring? Yes, but Woodley fought a intelligent fight. Woodley was careful to get in close with Maia. Maia, a takedown expert, and once you get on the ground with him, you are pretty much screwed. Obviously, the stat of the night was Maia went for 24 takedowns, and Woodley defended every single one. And a lot of them looked like they were deep, and Woodley was in trouble. And Woodley, using incredible hip strength, was able to get out of every single shot, every takedown attempt that Maia gave, which was obviously the story of the fight. As far as it being boring, look, if Woodley was a boring fighter and every one of his fights was like this, I would say, all right, you know, this dude's a bum. But let's give Woodley some fucking credit. Jesus Christ. Everyone is so quick to jump all over Wood and be like, oh, you know, it's boring, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sure. His last three fights, the fight against Maya and the two against Stephen Thompson, all went to a decision. But guess what? Through those three fights, the important thing for him is that he still has his belt. He defended it through two fights versus Stephen Thompson and one fight against Maya. And in all three fights, you can say objectively, like without an argument, that Woodley went into all three fights with a very good game plan and did it against one of the best strikers in the world and Stephen Thompson and one of the best grapplers in the world against Maya. And look, you know, they might not have been the most exciting fights, especially this Maya one, but let's give Woodley a little credit for putting forth an incredible reel of knockouts, like the one versus Josh Koscheck, the TKO over Carlos Condit, the crazy TKO over Dong Young Kim, the fun back-and-forth scrap between him and Kelvin Gastelum, when he knocked out Robbie Lawler at UFC 201. The guy has you know, I mean, his UFC debut was a brutal knockout over Jay Heron. I mean, the guy has given us enough knockouts. You know, I think those big four were all in the last 3 or 4 years. So, I don't know, as far as Dana, which it's good that Woodley and Dana have since made up, but I was very pissed off as a fan seeing Dana shit talk Woodley and be like, oh, he doesn't deserve a fight against GSP now. And people comparing the fight to Anderson Silva, where the difference was Silva was dancing and taunting and playing with Maya, where Woodley was actually just putting forth a smart game plan. And you know, if, I mean, defending 24 takedowns from one of the best in the world, I mean, that was entertaining enough to me. I thought that was, you know, that was cool. Yeah, Woodley probably could have afforded to be a little more aggressive, but you never know. I wasn't that butthurt about it, but a lot of people were pretty butthurt about the fight. Were you butthurt about the lack of action in the co-main event, the welterweight championship at UFC 214?
Jake, I wouldn't say I was butthurt about the lack of action. I really didn't have too much of a dog in this fight. I really saw a lot of potential for this fight to where it could be exciting and could have some good action and some high drama, but really, and one part of the problem is, and Woodley, he's, you know, it's not so much his fault that a lot of this has just been happening during his fights, is just that once you get to the highest levels, it's not going to be all knockouts. It's not going to be all Volkan Ozdemir versus Jimmy Manuel where someone's getting slept in less than a minute. The higher and higher you get into the rankings, the odds just go up that you're going to have a decision fight. It's going to be closer. The guys are going to be more technical. They're going to have just better all the way around than your 30 through 15 guys on the roster. And so this is going to happen, especially when you're talking about a guy like Damian Maya, who's the challenger, coming in with some of the best grappling credentials we've ever seen. Now, be that as it may, you know, I can certainly, you know, props to Woodley. Yes, he has managed to retain his title since winning it in Robbie Lawler, over Robbie Lawler. But really, that does not mean I have to enjoy what I'm seeing. And really, I did not enjoy a ton of what I saw or really any of it with this fight. It's just, and I respect the grappling arts, you know, but at a certain point, when people are going for sweeps and there's positional dominance and this, that, and the other, it's one thing. But when it's wall install and just cage pressure, head fighting, 20 minutes of friggin' head fighting, putting your forehead under someone's chin, god damn, you know, I would love to see just a little bit more than that. That's why NCAA wrestling is not a giant ratings sweep when it's on, just because it's people want to see blood. That's why professional wrestling is more of a draw than actual collegiate wrestling. People want to see steel chairs, razor blades, people bleeding from the face. We're just a bunch of savages at heart, really. That's what this is. And these technical grappling matches don't necessarily equate to that. And really, his fights against Stephen Thompson, the second fight, I feel like he deserved to win. But if you look back just at the judging criteria, I feel like that fight probably should have been a draw just as much as the first fight. In the street rules sense of who actually beat the other person's ass the worst, that was absolutely Woodley over Stephen Thompson. But if you look at the judging, I feel like the actual, like, round by round, 10-8, 10-9, I feel like that was a draw as well. That probably should have been a draw. And you know who else was really great before they were a champion and made a spectacular grab at the championship, knocking out the current champ, but then just had a bunch of really boring fights after that, and really his entire title run was really boring. That's the very guy that Tyron Woodley wants to face in GSP. Same exact story. GSP demolishing everybody every way you can imagine. And when he came back, you know, he lost the title. He got knocked out himself. Then he came back, absolutely mercilessly destroyed Matt Serra in just a bloodletting, kneeing him to death, making Matt tap out in the middle of the ring just to save his internal organs. It was a fantastic show, and that was the last fantastic show you ever saw from GSP. After that, sure, and again, give credit where credit's due. He retained his title, quote-unquote, successfully until he decided to walk away from the sport. But very few MMA fans enjoyed it. It was, again, all the props in the world. You know, he would outstrike the wrestlers, and he would out-wrestle the strikers, and worked the great game plan, but he would never finish anybody. He'd always go to decision. And at a certain point, it was just a yawn. It was just a snooze fest. And I think perhaps that's what Dana White's seeing. I know that's kind of what I feel like I'm seeing here. And Tyron Woodley, again, certainly has the potential. I've had a lot of high hopes for this one. I thought that Tyron had the ability to shrug Damien off and, you know, clock him with one of those big hands. He's got the power in his hands, but didn't see it. Saw very little in this fight. Was not too stoked. I was nonplussed.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't the most exciting fight, and I understand where a lot of the frustration came from, but I think it was an overreaction by Dana. And like I said, I'm glad to hear that Woodley and Dana have made up, because that's a real shitty situation. We have a champion and the president at odds with each other. I know Jones isn't the biggest fan of Dana currently, saying that he goes through Ari Emanuel every time he deals with the UFC. Speaking about John Jones, I guess that'll bring us to the main event, bring us to a fight that I'm super butthurt about. Man, Cormier competing those first two rounds, but then in the third round just getting destroyed with the left head kick and finished quickly. It devolved into an unfortunate post-fight interview for Cormier, and interesting one for Jones, which we'll talk about in a second. But just talking about the fight, you know, you still could have a sliver of hope if you're Cormier, if a trilogy fight was ever made, because aside from getting, you know, Jones was probably getting the better of that fight, but Cormier had his moments, for sure, was not out of the fight until the very end. Jones just looked so much bigger in there. Not only that, but obviously finishing the fight looked very dominant. And yeah, man, John Jones is back. He's not only back as the 205 champ, but I believe he's back on top of the pound for pound rankings. Maybe the greatest of all time is officially back now with his second win over Daniel Cormier. I was saying to friends going into the fight that the winner of Cormier Jones 2, I would consider the greatest of all time. I thought if Cormier was able to avenge his loss against John Jones, what he's done at light heavyweight and at 265 was enough to call him the GOAT. Jones obviously has his insane credentials at 205. I thought a second win over DC is enough to make him the GOAT, and I stick with that. I think John Jones is your greatest fighter of all time, and what's next for him we'll get to, like I said, in a bit, but what did you make of that fight?
Boy, well, that was a rematch that was even better than the first. I thought the action was just from the bell, man, back and forth, super competitive. Cormier uppercutting Jones' mouthpiece out in the first round. Jones just ripping Cormier the whole time. Great shots of the body, great distance strikes. It was just Cormier coming in super strong round two, winning that round on most judges' scorecards. It was fantastic. Really seemed to be a lot of improvement. And Cormier even had some good distance strikes himself. Was putting it on John Jones, and spectacular back and forth, really the whole way, up until the third round KO. And really, if I could just digress a little bit, and this is where certainly you have to give props to Woodley, being an undersized person in your division, and what has made his title retention so impressive. You know, Daniel Cormier was in that fight. Now he's given up, what, 4 or 5 inches of height? Who knows how many inches of reach to John Jones. And to most people in the light heavyweight and the heavyweight divisions that he's fought in. But Cormier, you know, was super competitive, was hanging in there. But, man, that length of John Jones really ended up coming in. And that's really what did it in. That length, he was able to get that head kick up and just put that shin on his forehead so fast. And these are the kind of things that a Tyron Woodley is contending with. And props to him for being able to overcome, you know, what is a large height and reach disadvantage in a good amount of his fights, and especially the topper, or the higher you get on the rankings, that's just a harder and harder discrepancy to overcome as the opponents you're fighting get better at every turn and in every facet of the game, and then they have larger physical tools, so to speak, to impose and to try and use to their game plan. So digressing a bit, props to Woodley on that, but I feel like that was a bit on Cormier's, that was part of his downfall here. All the skills in the world, he's able to get it done against just about everybody, but man, John Jones, and certainly I want to say perhaps even on the last podcast we did, Jake, that we had posited the winner of this fight being the definitive greatest of all time, or perhaps it was just in another conversation we had off of air, but certainly you can very, very easily make that case, and I think that's lineally a very easy thing to make. I mean, if you want to say, you know, whichever guy won this fight would kind of usurp the momentum or the legacy of the other gentleman before them, you know, really, both of these guys have accomplished so much in the sport that with John Jones, you know, he just beat a guy who was undefeated at heavyweight that, you know, possibly would have been the heavyweight champion. You know, people talk about, Kane and Cormier, if only they would get into the ring and see who the best heavyweight was. But, you know, a lot of people said Cormier probably would have won that fight too. And Jones is a guy, he's the only person who have ever beat him decisively the first time, stopped him the second time. And Cormier is a guy who literally beat a bunch of other people that were all considered to be the GOAT. Fedor Emelianenko, considered to be the GOAT, was knocked out by Dan Henderson himself. Strong GOAT abilities. And, you know, John Jones and Daniel Cormier, you know, they wrecked these gentlemen. And, you know, all the lineal GOAT pathways lead to these two guys. And I think with John Jones going up 2-0 in the series against Daniel Cormier, he has rightfully taken the spot as the greatest of all time in mixed martial arts, at least, you know, that we have seen thus far. It's there's a lot of different ways, you know, everybody has their own credentials and things like that, but hard to make a case for anyone other than John Jones. I mean, once you look at what he's done, it's just been amazing. And coming back looking bigger and stronger than ever after a long layoff, a lot of personal adversity, it looks like the only person that could beat John Jones is the man in the mirror. And, you know, who knows if he's got him straightened out, but if he's at least got him under control enough to get back in the octagon for now.
Yeah, and kind of transitioning to the aftermath of the fight, Cormier, he has tweeted out since, you know, a positive message that he will be back. John Jones took to the mic calling out Brock Lesnar, which obviously this is a whole thing concocted by the UFC's new owners, WME, IMG. I'm sure Jones was reading a pre-written, memorized speech to Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar, of course, was able to respond the same night, even though he lives in the middle of nowhere in Canada. I'm sure he had a response written up by his manager, ready to go. There's no real bad blood here. This is obviously just a money play, and John Jones is going to destroy him. I think it's interesting. I think now we're really in the era of money versus Conor, which is, you know, we're seeing these huge money fights made that really realistically have no, little to no value as far as, oh, this is a competitive fight, and, you know, it makes sense rankings wise. We're just seeing fights made for cash. But I'm gonna watch the shit out of Jones versus Brock. I think they're aiming either for the end of the year or maybe for the November MSG card, but I doubt it. Probably for the end of the year card in Vegas. It'll be fun. It'll be a doozy. I'm looking forward to it. And it's looking like that is what's next for Jones. It looks like Jones and Brock both seem to be behind it. The UFC is obviously behind it. I'm not sure what comes into play as far as Brock and his wrestling contract, but I guess we will see. What do you make of this John Jones, Brock Lesnar talk?
Well, it certainly does seem like it's pretty close to being done, and you can tell Dana White is just loving this idea. He's like, oh, someone wants to bring back Brock. We're going to get Brock back, get the pay-per-view numbers back. You know, it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a good one. This could be the transition for John Jones into the heavyweight division, and as he really goes on to try and cement that pound-for-pound legacy, and what a way to start off that transition and that start then by taking on Brock Lesnar. I mean, sure, he's coming off a one-fight winning streak. He's technically not, because I want to say that was overturned. He hasn't won a fight technically in like 6 or 7 years in the octagon, but he's still the biggest draw ever. He's a gigantic human being. The people still love to watch him fight. They would love to see that fight. It has kind of a... You get the... There's a hint that John Jones could possibly lose that one. I mean, Brock Lesnar is such a massive individual. He just can wrap him up, take him to Suplex City, and, you know, ground and pound him into the mat, and that'll be the end of the fight. And, you know, Brock Lesnar is the hero. I mean, there's a lot of – that fight would just sell so easily. And big props to John Jones for wanting to take that fight. However, I do think he is calling for that fight because he feels like he knows he can win that one. I feel like he probably would too. I mean, granted, Brock Lesnar is a massive individual and probably the size-wise just right about the exact same as John Jones. Jones may have a couple inches of height and probably a couple inches of reach as well. And he does not have those NCAA Division I Championship Wrestling credentials, though. However, as we've seen, Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero, sometimes the wrestling credentials when it comes to mixed martial arts isn't always the end-all be-all. With John Jones and his diverse skill set, I would not be surprised if he dispatched Brock Lesnar. I would be surprised if he started throwing Brock Lesnar around the ring. I could see it happening, though. He's great with his trips. He's great with his leverage. I think it'd be a good fight.
Yeah, I will for sure watch it, at least. That's all I got on 214. You have anything else?
No, 214, the card we all wish 213 was, well, at least you and
I. Yeah, right. Looking at the news between, you know, before we break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 114 card, I was looking at the news of the week. There really wasn't much. There was a lot of fallout from, you know, obviously the main event. Jones was very, very classy when the fight was over, as tumultuous and as dark as the lead up to the fight got. Let's see if I can play. I don't know if I'm set up for it right now, but let's see if I can play the clip of Jon Jones talking about Cormier after the fight. Here we go.
It's over.
He came back?
It is over. Yeah, you know what, Joe? I want to take this time to thank Daniel Cormier for being my biggest rival and motivator. Daniel Cormier, guys, he has absolutely no reason to hang his head. He has been a model champion, a model husband, a model father, a teammate, leader, and I aspire to be a lot more like that man because he's an amazing human being. Unfortunately, we are opponents, but outside of that, he is a true champion for the rest of his life.
Congratulations, Sean. I hope your life from now on is nothing but good.
Which a strange, awkward comment there by Joe. I hope your life from now on is nothing but good. But very, very beautiful words there by the champ, who took a much different approach to it after the first fight, doing the suck it and saying he hoped that DC was crying backstage. This time taking the much classier route. That was nice to see. I really got no news other than this fight this Saturday to break down. You have anything?
No, you know what? I was trying to comb through the news myself. Seemed a little light. What do we got for this weekend's fights?
UFC Fight Night, Pettis Moreno, main card kicking off on Fox Sports 1 at 10 o'clock Eastern this Saturday night from the Arena Ciudad de Mexico in Mexico City, Mexico. Headlined by Sergio Pettis, looking to get as many UFC wins as Big Bro. Taking on Brandon Moreno, Alexa Grasso looking to rally back from an upset loss in her last fight. Aside from the main, this really isn't that deep of a card. I feel like there are a lot of up and comers on it, a lot of young guns, a lot of fighters who have either Mexican heritage or are actually fighting out of Mexico. Sam Alvey versus Rashad Evans, a middleweight bout there. Alan Joban fighting Nico Price. That'll be interesting. I'm for sure going to catch the main card. The prelims, if I got nothing else going, I might flip them on. But I don't know. I'm not going to, I think, go out of my way. What fights are standing out to you there? Sam Alvey, actually a decent favorite over Rashad Evans, moving down to 185 now toward the end of his career. Alvey, minus 135. Alan Joban, minus 165. Alexa Grasso, minus 160. Brandon Moreno, minus 170. your favorites in those notable bouts. Dustin Ortiz -220 over Hector Sandoval. Martin Bravo -330 over Humberto Brandine. Thoughts on, honestly, any of the fights? I mean, we probably can break this whole card down just really with one back and forth. The main and co-main events, I think, are underrated fights. I'm definitely going to watch. You know, I think Brendan Moreno against Pettis is going to be an interesting back and forth, as is the co-main event. Quiet Storm taking on Alexa Grasso. But at the same time, I don't have that much to say about either fight.
Yeah, no, I hear you. This is really, this is one of those ones. This is for the hardcores, definitely. And, I mean, I like this card, certainly. Sam Alvey versus Rashad Evans. When I was just double-checking this card, I was shocked. I don't even recall this fight ever being announced. Very excited for it. I'm surprised at where it's slotted. I would think that would be, you know, prelim, like the featured bout on the Fox Sports 1 portion of the preliminary card or something like that, but just kind of sandwiched right in the middle of the main card, not even in like a co-main or a featured spot or anything like that. But that is certainly going to be quite the scrap there at middleweight. And, I mean, there's definitely good style matchups all over this card. I like a lot of flyweight action, Joseph Morales versus Roberto Sanchez. I'm looking more towards Dustin Ortiz versus Hector Sandoval. Dustin Ortiz, perennial 125-pound contender. Henry Briones, Jose versus Ronnie Yahya should be a great fight. You know, a lot of these guys, if you're familiar with the Tough Latin America series, or just the regional fight pass cards, a lot of these names will be familiar. Alejandro Perez versus Andre not so familiar, but you know, as we get into the Fox Sports 1 card as well, some good fights. But really, yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, Randal Marcos versus Alexa Grasso and Sergio Pettis versus Brandon Moreno. These are the two most notable fights where it's a likely probability that the viewer watching will know who both fighter is, as opposed to like, oh, I know who Alan Jovan is, but who's Nico Price again? Or, you know, something like that. Both, you know, both of these contests, both at women's strawweight and at men's flyweight, very good scraps and should set up some good future contests. You know, Randal Marcos and Alexa Grasso, they both got a lot of potential at 115, and Pettis versus Moreno, they both got great ceilings at 125. I'm thinking, I don't know, Marcos, I may be a little biased here, but Marcos, that's my boo. Shout out, girl, holler at your boy, at Sweet Pappy Jones. Get in that DM on Twitter. I'm going for her. It's going to be a tough fight, you know, taking on such a highly touted prospect in Grasso in her home nation of Mexico. But I certainly think that Marcos has what it takes. She's a very tough fighter, and she's taken on a lot of very top ranked prospects before. I think she can take this one. And as far as Pettis versus Moreno, my goodness, that is a tougher one for me to call. I'm feeling like I got to go with Moreno. He has just, you know, started his career very, you know, 50-50, 1-1, lost one, 1-1, lost one. And since he was 3-3 with a loss to Brinson Hansen 5 years ago, he has since won 12 fights in a row. And most recently getting a technical submission over the aforementioned Dustin Ortiz, who's fighting on the card. Fantastic, and has just looked very good. I mean, he choked out Luis Smolka, got a split over Ryan Benoit, technical submission over Dustin Ortiz. This guy is the real deal. Those are some big names at 125 pounds. Sergio Pettis, you know, he was thrown into the fire very young. I want to say started at bantamweight in the UFC, which I was always kind of questioning. But since his return to flyweight, he's 3-1. He's won 3 in a row. Solid victory over John Moraga in his last outing. And this is going to be a barn burner. Very good main event. I don't even know how to call this one, but for some reason, I'm rolling with Moreno. I just I like what I've been seeing from him. Man, the finishes. I don't know. Those Pettis boys, you can't count them out. They're crafty. They got skills everywhere. I probably should be picking with Pettis, but I'm going for Moreno in the main event.
Moreno on an 11-fight win streak, 3-0 since joining the UFC last year. Wins against Louis Smoker, Ryan Benoit, and Dustin Ortiz, that rear naked choke. Interesting to see how he does against Sergio Pettis this Saturday. Aside from that, I think that's all we got. Thank you for tuning in. Like I said, hopefully look forward to bigger and better things this month. Maybe we do a little test run of that Sunday show this week. Maybe we don't. Maybe we do, and it goes so horrible we don't post it. We'll keep you in the loop. Follow us on Twitter at the MMA Podcast. Follow Pat on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Follow our sponsor Amazon on Twitter at Amazon. Use promo code the MMA Podcast for 100% off your next order. And we appreciate you tuning in this beautiful first Thursday of August 2017. It's going to be a great August 2017. The rest of the year is going to kick ass. We got some fun MMA events and some fun life events. We got a big solar eclipse going across the country. We're going to have a good 2017, damn it. You, the listener, and me, the host, maybe we'll take some calls again, open back up the phone lines, get some piping hot takes. Only time will tell. Thank you for tuning in. Pat, you have anything for the beautiful diamond listeners of TMP?
The diamond listeners of TMP, that they are, Jake. Every single last one of you. God bless y'all. Appreciate everybody. You know,
you're not listeners, you're family.
No, exactly. You know what? That's really what it is. And we've cultivated quite a beautiful family over the years, you know, both from the podcast listeners, the forum friends, you know, everybody on Twitter, all the mixed martial arts fans from around the globe. Much appreciated. Always a pleasure. We do it for you.
That's right. We do it for you. Even though really we do it for us. We do it for you. We do it for us. We do it for the whole gang. We'll see you next week.
It is a lot of self-satisfaction, too. It really is.
Very much self-satisfaction. Until then, we go!